Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event. Fight fans worldwide, you've tuned into the number one undisputed boxing podcast today. This is the Boxing Breakdown. Now, your heavy-handed, hard-hitting host, Mark Roxy.
What's up, what's up, what's up? What's going on out there, people? This is your host, Mark Roxy, and I want to wish you a happy new year, 2022. We are on the heels of 2022, literally hours away from our new year, man. And I am not at all ashamed to say goodbye to 2021. It has been a hell of a year. And I am so excited for the possibilities of what's going to happen in 2022. So welcome, everyone. And I am here with my partner in crime, amazing Mr. Harold Hunt. What's up? What's up? What's up?
Hey, happy new year to you guys. I'm right here, man, ready to go, ready for that new year. But we're going to push it out with a nice little push going forward.
Talk to me,
you guys, I'm glad you guys are here. And, you know, hey, let's chop it up.
Yeah, man, let's chop it up. We got so, oh my gosh, we have so much to talk about. We are going to recap the year that we've had at the Boxing Breakdown, all the podcasts that we've done. We're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming year in review. We're going to talk about what's happening right now, what just happened. We're going to name our contender of the year, our breakdown to breakthrough fighter of the year. We're going to get into knockout of the year. Man, we are going to talk about so much. We are going to talk about fighter of the year, fight of the year. They're all different, as you know. There's a lot to chop up. We're going to talk about the upset of the year. And then finally, we're going to take a look in to 2022. Harold, man, I just, first of all, I don't know if you know that today, this episode on December 31st is our 60th episode. Yo, it's 60. What do you think, Harold? 60.
That is spectacular, man.
Oh, dude. Are you serious, man? It's like, it's epic. And you know what? It's so epic. We get a round of applause. And... That's it. We did it, bro. We did it. We did it. 60 episodes, man. This is our, we're coming into our third season. There are, as I said, 60 episodes. And, you know, I thought what would be really, really fun, Harold, for us to do is for us to just take a look back and talk a little bit about, you know, the episodes that we had and what we talked about. Man, if you're listening to the Boxing Breakdown, you already know. I mean, last year was, in fact, well, December 31st, 2020 was our 25th episode. And that episode featured the president of the Atlantic City Boxing Hall of Fame, Mr. Ray McLean. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, man. And then we went on right into January. January, we had Fulton, Leo, Santa Cruz, Romero, Sparrow. We had a that was a great episode. We did a whole episode in February 4th on Ryan Garcia and, you know, like where he goes from here. And that was prior to his coming out and talking about, you know, the his need to take care of his mental health. You remember that?
Yes. Yes, I do. He, he got a lot of support for that.
Yeah, he did get a lot of support for that, but you know, he really, that was like a year ago. That was February. And when we did that episode, and he still hasn't, has he fought since then? I don't think he has.
Well, he's coming out. He'll be fighting shortly here. He's completely healthy. They're in negotiations for another fight, for his fight coming up here.
Yeah.
He wants to fight Cruz. He wants to fight the guy who fought Tank, so he can prove that he's still a viable fighter, and he wants to do a little better job than Tank did on his opponent.
Right.
So that's his goal right now.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting. And I remember we did, we had an episode on brutal Brendan Barrett, and we talked about the lessons that he learned in boxing. And that was a pretty provocative episode. We did another one on why do fighters pad their records, which was pretty controversial. We got a lot of people chiming in on that one. I remember there were a lot of people that went back and forth on that. If you guys are listening on YouTube and you'd like to get into the conversation, please do drop your comments in the comments box. We will answer them live on the air. And if you're following us on Apple Podcasts, thank you for being with us. Thank you for being with us wherever you are tuning in. And yeah, so gosh, we did so many. We did the Oscar Valdez fight. We did Saul Canelo Alvarez, Adrian Broner, The Problem. Yeah, man. We had a really great 30th episode. I don't know if you remember that 30th episode where we chopped up COVID and we talked about contracts and purse bids. And we had our good friend, Mr. Paul S. Haberman, boxing attorney. And that was a pretty informative episode. We then got into the battle between Thomas Lamana and Arslanda Lari. Remember that one?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. We had Dylan Price on with his father, the dynamic duo. That was a great episode. Those two are really an amazing team. Actually, all three of them, Dylan's brother and Dylan, you know, they're just two amazing brothers, really up-and-coming fighters, and certainly two to be watching in the new year. My gosh, we had Canine Bundridge on. We had Teal. Yo, we had Teofimo Lopez, Teofimo Senior. Yeah, remember Teofimo Lopez Senior on in the prelude? That was in April 30th talking about the Kambosa fight. Remember that?
Yeah, he was quite animated at that time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then, that was something. That was quite an episode. We had Heather Hardy on, the former WBC world champion. She was on. We did the Devin Haney, Jorge Linares bout, the Nordine Abali. Is that how you say his name?
Correct. You let it roll off your tongue.
Yeah, versus Nonito Donaire. That was a phenomenal, phenomenal fight. And yeah, we did some Logan Paul stuff. Travis Kaufman, Billy Briscoe. We had Billy Briscoe on. We had Pat Russo, Adrian Clark. Man, what a year, man. We did the Davis Barrios, the Loma Nakatani, Lopez and Kambosos recap. So many things. Just if you listen, I could just go on and on and on. Our last episode was, the news on Gervonta Davis, the results of the Teofimo Lopez fight and George Kambosos, and then the hard hitting recap of that December 4th Boardwalk boxing series that they had featuring Anthony Juice, Nestor Bravo, and Christian Tapia. Harold, man, what a year. Congratulations, bro. It's been a pleasure to have you on the journey. It's been really great. We called that fight. Remember that fight? When was that?
I was in New Jersey at the Boardwalk Hotel and Arcade.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's not a casino. You're right. It's the show. It's the historic Showboat Hotel in Atlantic City. That was a great event, man. You flew in from
Atlanta,
and we just had a ball, man. I really had a great time with you. It's been a great year for us, man. So let's switch gears here a little bit, and let's talk about the upset, right? The upset of a year, right? There are a lot of upsets, actually. There were a lot. As I was reviewing all of the different upsets, some of them, Harold, were obviously Nonito Donaire versus Nordine Obali, the southpaw Frenchman. That was an incredible fight, and Donaire was not expected to win that fight. And not only did he win the fight, but the guy continues to make history in boxing. Like, he continues to defy, you know, the odds every single time.
Yes, he does. He went to that fight knowing that he was going to win. He didn't even have to think about how he needed a plan B or anything like that. He knew, just by watching film and hearing him speak after it was over, he knew he could go to the body. He knew the openings were there. He knew that he wouldn't have any resistance getting into the space to deliver the punches.
Right.
He walked in there knowing he was going to win that fight. And he just executed. It wasn't something that just came to him because he was in the thralls of the fight and he had to figure out, well, this is what I need to do to win, or this, that, and the other. No, right. He came in and knew exactly what he was going to do, how he was going to do it, how he was going to get in the pocket to deliver the blows. He did so nonchalantly. So in his mind, it was even an upset. He was going to win that fight.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was one of the great upsets of the year. And I mean, as I was reviewing all the fights and all the stuff we covered, Mikey, how about the Mikey Garcia versus Sandor Martin? Remember that fight?
Yes. Now, that was just a case of you can kind of overlook your opponent only because your eyes are focused further, which is a sin in boxing.
Yep.
And if, in fact, you are in the first round with supposedly someone you're supposed to beat and you get hit,
yeah,
all of a sudden your defense, your offense, all of it goes away because the first thing you're thinking is, oh, my gosh, I can't let this nobody beat me. And you lose all the discipline you have to use to beat the guy. And yeah, then you leave yourself vulnerable and you end up losing on points, was exactly what happened.
Yeah, no, I know. It was an amazing thing to watch, to be honest, because I didn't expect that, to be honest. Did you expect that at all?
Well, I saw from jump, as soon as he realized that this guy was okay and he wasn't prepared, and mentally he did not prepare, and he tried to reel his mind back. He just said, I just gotta take him out. I just gotta take my defense be gone. I have to take him out. And he just left himself open mentally and physically to lose on scorecards.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was pretty clear to me from round one. It was clear what had happened.
Yeah, man.
With that situation.
I just, like you said it eloquently in the beginning. I don't think it's a classic example of overlooking your opponent. Just literally overlooking your opponent and not being prepared for what's going to happen, you know, and we can't, you know, how do I say it? We can't overlook our opponents, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
That's, you know, very true. And that has happened. And, you know, if you want to go further with it, Lopez and Kambosos, that was the same type of situation. He figured he could take him out early in the fight. He couldn't do that. So he just went balls to the walls and he didn't, think about defense or strategy or accumulation of punches. He just went after him. And when you go after anyone in any situation, especially a world caliber fighter, you're going to leave yourself open. And his mental situation made him vulnerable to lose. And that's what happened.
Yeah, no. Well said. Well said. I mean, there was also, I'm not sure. Do you know this guy? This was a fight that I really didn't expect to go the way it went. But nonetheless, it was really, really outstanding. There was the southpaw Melukuzev, from that guy from Uzbekistan, and he fought, he's a southpaw, and he fought Gabriel Rosado out of Philadelphia. Do you remember that fight?
Let me see. Just vaguely, but it was an upset. And he was just got beaten by a guy who was better. That wasn't a lapse of mental situation. That wasn't a lapse of overlooking. That was just the skill set wasn't acknowledged. And he went in there with someone who had a skill set slightly better, and he prevailed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was, that was a major upset. I don't think that anybody other than Gabriel Rosado actually thought he was going to win the fight. Nobody told Gabriel Rosado that he wasn't supposed to win that fight, and he won the fight. And it was just, he did it in an absolutely outstanding fashion. And, I think he hit the guy with an overhand right in the fight. And Rosado was down in that fight, if I recall. Y'all that are tuning in, if you have any comments about that fight, it was a long time ago, a couple months ago. But yeah, Rosado had been down in the fight. He came back. He still landed a beautiful overhand right, caught the guy. He pulled the guy right to the corner, landed the overhand, and he was certainly in the fight, the underdog all the way through. So that was a great fight, Harold. And now let's talk about, first of all, who did you have as the upset of the year? Which fighter, Harold, or which fight did you have as the upset of the year?
I'd have to say the Mikey fight. For me, it was the Mikey fight because that Martin was a simple money grab, warm up, sparring session. There was no hype. There was no advertising. There was no, the betting line was just average. It was completely looked at as just an easy fight for him to put himself back in situation. The optics would have been good. He would have had a couple of knockouts, would have been splashed all across the internet, him knocking this guy out, this, that, and the other. He would have been in all the conversations, all of that. So they were looking forward to all of that. This other gentleman had no choice. Now, of course, you want to say the Kambosos, Lopez thing, but Kambosos had a skill set. He was undefeated. This Martin guy was absolutely off the radar. Right. So as far as shock value, and then he got beat up too. Mikey got beat up too, not just slipped through because he won on points. He beat him up.
Right.
So from, just from me, I see that is my upset because it was so far off the rails that everyone was just pretty surprised at that. Right. But that's my opinion.
Okay. Well, I had the Miguel Burchlet from Mexico versus Oscar Valdez, also of Mexico. I had that as like a major upset. That fight was absolutely outstanding, and I think we're going to draw upon that a little bit later on as well in this podcast. But that to me was epic. Epic, Harold. What do you think? Do you remember that fight?
Oh, yes. That was an excellent fight, too. But if you recall, both of those gentlemen were world class. Both those gentlemen had a great history.
Right.
Both those gentlemen worked really well together. And they really were excellent fighters. So either one of those gentlemen could have won that fight. So there was no air of upset. Even right. one could have knocked the other one out. Right. So as far as being spectacular, it was. But as a sheer upset, it doesn't register to me.
Right, right. I get it. I just, to me, I expected Burchelt to actually win that fight. I did. I didn't expect to see Oscar Valdez not only win the fight, but do it in an absolutely brilliant fashion. And I believe he was being trained by Eddie Reynoso at the time. Is that correct?
As he was.
Okay, we'll get into that a little bit later.
Yeah, but he's got a little time in our podcast today.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of time in this podcast for sure, man. So, but yeah, I mean, just an absolutely outstanding performance. And for me, being a follower of both of these guys, it was an upset to me because I just, you know, he had him hurt too, meaning Oscar Valdez had Miguel Burchelt hurt several times in the fight. And, you know, it looked like it was going to be stopped two or three times during the fight. And then, you know, Burchelt started to come on, popped his gloves together, you know, like they like to do where they hit the gloves like this and that, you know what that means. it means, you know, I'm going out on my shield maybe, but, you know, Burchelt kept going forward and forward in that fight. And again, Oscar Valdez just rolled underneath some shots, pulled him the little, and then boom, and landed the, I think it was a hook, right? It was a left hook.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. They just, it was right in the arc of power. He had the leverage on the legs.
Yeah.
He had the momentum. And Burchelt was coming in hard.
Yeah.
So his own momentum met with that perfect punch, you know, with the balance and the power, and within the arc, it was what they call it, human explosion, human dynamite. I mean, dynamite. he really turned him off.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was. I remember that watching that. I still get goosebumps when I think about that fight because that was to me, it was a great upset. Even though the skill sets were matched up, they were both very, very close competitors.
Yes.
But it's still, you know, to me, I was like, wow. And he won the belt, right? He won the belt on that one. So lightweight, yeah. Right?
Right. The suddenness of it is what is exciting because the other man was charging. He wasn't hurt. He wasn't wobbling. He was coming on hard. He was coming strong. And all of a sudden, it just turned.
And
it just,
you know, we
changed.
We had been the week before that or 2 weeks before that, Harold, I had been to MGM Grand, the bubble. And we had a fighter that fought in the bubble. Jonathan Rodriguez out of Bethlehem. What's up? Shout out to Jonathan. But we were out there and he had a competition there and it was just the oddest thing to be in the bubble. And this, I remember this fight was also going to take place in the bubble as well. And so it had to be an odd experience for both of the fighters to be fighting in the bubble. And I distinctly remember the punch when it landed. I remember hearing it so vividly, so clearly, and then hearing him hit the canvas so clearly, and then Oscar Valdez screaming as he's running around, but there was no sound of applause in the audience because there was no audience. And I just remembered that being such an eerie experience watching that fight.
Imagine if you were watching it from your home and all of a sudden you see that shocking knockout, yeah. You hear no crowd and you're left in your mind what you just saw.
Yeah. No.
Now, I believe a lot of fans out there, they recall that time. They're sitting in front of their TV. It's quiet in the arena. This guy gets knocked out suddenly like that. The emotions and the understanding that this runs through you is something you will never forget.
Yeah, man. And speaking of never forgetting, let's talk about who you have as the contender of the year. And this is a fighter that's up and coming, unstoppable, moving forward. You know that he's going to make some big noise in the sport of boxing. And so that's kind of like our criteria for, you know, the contender of the year. Who do you have?
I like Jared, the real big baby Anderson. Like him.
Okay.
He is a heavyweight fighter. He's a young gentleman, around 21, I believe, 21, yes. 22. He's a sparring partner with Tyson Fury.
Okay.
He's been in the gym his entire life. He's not like an ex-football player who's coming over,
right,
or a wrestler who's coming over, or someone, right, who got hurt in some other sport and they decided to try boxing.
Yeah.
He's been in the gym as a child, and he's been working toward this situation his entire life. So his whole mindset is about boxing. He's got the size and the reach and the temperament to do so. He is he has a charisma about him. His vocabulary. He's been groomed to be on the camera, to be in the ring, to have an outside persona. All of that has been put into him. So not only is he great inside the ring, but outside the ring, he's got all the elements. So I truly like him. I think his time will come. He doesn't need to fight with the big boys as of yet. He's got to get through where he's at now. He's got to grow. You know, he's got to come through middle school. He's got to come through high school. So, but as of now, he's absolutely doing a great job, and he'll start getting some fringe contenders going up. They're anticipating that he may be in the top 10 sometime this year, but I would say 23.
Wow. 2023 is your prediction, huh?
23, he should be in the top 10. Wow. Not 22, 23.
Yeah. No, I get that. I could see that happening very much for him. And it would be great to see that happen. So, okay. So would you like to know who my pick is?
Yes, yes. I want to ask you, please, who is your up-and-coming contender that has you excited?
Yeah, so I'm going to go with the one and only, Jaron Boots Ennis. That's my pick. That's my pick, man. Boots, what do you think?
Oh, man, I got a lot about Boots, but you go first and then I come after you.
No, I mean, he's the most complete fighter out there right now. I mean, arguably, of course, but he, you know, to me, I've watched him for many, many years, and I just don't see anybody out there that can really deal with Jaron Boots Ennis. He's got hand speed, he's got reflexes, he's got defense, he's got offense, he can fight forward, he can box, he can punch, he's just a complete fighter. He's accurate, he's got good punch placement, excellent foot movement, it's just all there. He's got the angles. So I'm just going to go on a limb here and say Philly's own Jaron Boots Ennis is my pick for contender of the year. And I will also give an honorable mention, which I know you're going to concur with, Cool Boy Steph, Stephen Fulton.
Now, he is already a champion. He's got two of the belts.
Right.
So if you want to say contender to be undisputed, yes, but he's already a champion. So he's not really moving up.
Right.
He's not graduating middle school to high school. He's already basically there. But as far as moving up to be an undisputed champion, yes, he's on the rise. But right. I agree with you with Boots, because Boots has the same situation as Mr. Anderson, where he came up boxing. His brothers and his father, they were professional boxers, this, that, and the other. And he's done all the work, too, as far as his diction and this and that and the other. So he has all that. His situation is he hasn't signed with a major promoter.
Right.
See, Anderson is a PBC fighter, so therefore he's going to be directed that way.
Right.
But Boots is not. So that's why the public necessarily may not know who he is, other than our fans and the diehard fans. They're going to know who he is. But once he signs with a major, then he'll be splashed on the scene so heavily, then we'll all concur with you.
He's going to be the dude. He's like the future. He's definitely someone to keep an eye out for because he's just an outstanding boxer. And again, Stephen Fulton, as you so eloquently pointed out, is in fact a champion already. But I think we've just scratched the surface of what he's going to be doing in the sport. So,
yes,
you know, yeah.
I just quickly, Mark, I just have to say about cool boy Steph, that is his moniker.
Yeah.
He's able to take what you do, your aggression, and to mute it and do that. Floyd was good at that. I can do what you can do, but right. I'll do it better than what you do. And that way he's never adjusting to someone else's style. He said, okay, well, I see your style. I'll duplicate it, but better, and beat you. To me, I like that type of fighter because he's taking your best thing and besting you at it.
Right. Yeah. No. So Harold, let's talk a little bit about the fighters that have basically broken it down to break through. Fighters of this year that have broken through. Who would you say you would consider a fighter that has broken through, that has really kind of established a presence in the sport?
I have to say Kimbosa's at this point because he was a winner all the time and the fight kept getting postponed over and over again. Right. So he had to go through the news cycle over and over again, the boxing news cycle, the sports news cycle, over and over. Each time they kept pulling out things about him, this and that, as the fight kept getting postponed over and over again. So the anticipation of him not winning was just heightened because of all the postponements.
Right.
So when he won, he just broke through because there was so much negative information or casual information or maybe just nonchalant information that he was just, let's just get through this.
Right.
You know, I gotta report on this guy again.
Yeah. But
he put all that to shame with the win.
Wow. What about, let me ask you, have you heard of this guy, Yanibek Alamakal Nolly, I guess that's how you say his name. Alamakal Nolly. Yanibek, former Olympian. Guy's got over like 300 amateur fights. I've been peeking at this guy, right? He's, let me see if I can pull him up. I think I got something up on the screen here for you to see this guy.
He's still doing four rounders, right? I mean, six rounders now.
Yeah, yeah. He's a relatively new guy. And, yeah, he's new to the sport for sure.
Yes, yes, yes. He is very heavy-handed. He kind of reminds me of a Duran type thing when Duran was at lightweight, when he was very heavy-handed, where every punch had the other guy doing the two-step, you know, from the left and the right. The guy was just, stepping in potholes left and every time he got hit by the guy. So he's extremely powerful.
Yeah.
However, he's not. He hasn't been there with anybody who is going to hit him in between all that power. So the eye test, yes, he looks great. Boom, boom, guys, you know, slipping and dipping because they're getting hit. But we have yet to see him hit. But from on the outside, yes, I mean, he looks great. He those straight punches. He's powerful. He's aggressive. All of that. He just hasn't been hit.
Right. No. Absolutely. Can't argue with that at all. And that brings me to the next breakthrough fighter. Keyshawn Davis. What about Keyshawn Davis? You know much about him?
I've only seen him once or twice.
Yeah.
He has the discipline to go to the body. So obviously his fundamentals are in place because that will save you that will move, get your knockouts with less trauma on you, on your knuckles, on your arms and all of that, because you go into a soft spot of the body and you're able to, and you get to practice your leverage and your power, yet you're not hurting your arm or your ankle, I mean, or your knuckles or anything like that. So my opinion is if fighters who have a large knockout percentage, if over half of them are body shots, that's beautiful, because that's what you want to do. You want to get there without less trauma to yourself. So, right. Yeah, I do like him strictly because from what I've seen, he's his discipline to go to the body.
Yeah, no. Very, very talented fighter. He was an amateur fighter. He turned pro, right? And from my understanding, he turned pro. Then he went to the Olympics. Competed in the Olympics and then was pretty successful in the Olympics. And then he came back and now he's pro again. Right. So
yes.
But this is,
they changed the rules for that situation. Yeah.
Yeah, they did. But that's a whole other podcast, but I definitely think that this is a guy to keep an eye on. This is a young up and coming fighter that I think has a lot of potential in the sport. And this is, what about Troy Isley? You know much about Troy Isley?
Very, very little. I have not. If I have seen him, I didn't recognize his name. I watch every little clip of everybody all the time.
Yeah, and, let me pull him up so he jumps up onto your radar. This is Troy Isley. So I recently was working with a fighter that was supposed to square off against this guy. He's going to be fighting, I believe, in the new year in New York, and it might be even in mid-January. But we were scheduled to potentially have a fight against this gentleman, but I don't think that fight is going to happen. But this is a young man who I think is also another one to watch for. Very, very talented fighter, up and coming. I think he's promoted by Top Rank. And I thought I'd just put him up there and say, let's keep an eye on this guy for 2022.
Oh, wait, will we do so?
Exactly. All right. So, Harold, let's move it right along here. Let's get into my good friend, Harold. I know you've been waiting for this one. I just love this stuff, man. The knockout of the year. Let's go to the knockout of the year, Harold. Who you got?
Well, I had two. One was Burt Schelt, but my second one, which is a close runner-up, I want to say 1A and 1B. And 1B has to be Deontay Wilder's demise against Tyson Fury. That knockout was quite brutal, only because Wilder absorbed that type of punishment so long. The same type of punch, he kept taking it and just taking it and taking it. And all of a sudden, the A got flipped.
Yeah.
And that was it. But the finality of it, because he was out before he hit the canvas, you know, he just totally ended the whole situation.
Right.
And that was quite a knockout. It was overhand right. It crashed nicely. It was well done. So I like that one only because of the accumulation. But number one has to be Bichelt's knockout because it was so sudden.
Yeah, Harold. Yeah, I have to tell you that I also, it was very, very difficult. You'd have to go back to the beginning of the year to really find that Bichelt and Valdez fight as being the knockout of the year, right? So you really we had to go back and really take a look at the whole year in order to come up with that. But I also agree that, you know, if I were going to, if I were going to pick the knockout of the year, then it would have to be, as you stated just now, it would have to be the, I'm pulling it up here. Where we go.
the Pachelt.
Ah, there we go. There we go. There it is. Okay. Yeah. I would have to have picked that fight because it really was Miguel Berchelt and Oscar Valdez. It was an amazing fight. It was an absolute astonishing knockout. And I think it really reverberated through the boxing community, that particular knockout. And so that's what I would have to say was in fact, you know, and actually that wasn't the photo that we just looked at. That wasn't a photo of the actual knockout, right? The actual knockout looked more like this. Okay. He was face down. For those of you that are listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, if you're listening to the audio version of this, you can't really see the actual knockdown or the knockout rather, but it was similar to the Manny Pacquiao, Juan Manuel Marquez knockout where the hands are actually underneath the body and your face is planting into the canvas. It was just an absolutely frightening knockout and thunderous knockout. So I'm going with Oscar Valdez and yeah.
Okay. And they're both with cylinder because the brain was turned off. So the natural reaction to put your arms out to brace a fall, that was gone because all motor functions were turned off at that point. Yes. So they both went down in such a manner. Wow. So whenever you go down face first and your natural human reaction to put your arms out to brace a fall, yeah, that is gone, you're out. Right. And you could bounce your head off the canvas or what have you, or you could break your nose, or, you know, there's so many things that happen when people go face first in a ring. Now, in the street, you're going to have broken teeth and that type of thing when you go down like that in the street. But in a ring, you know, you're just going to bounce. But yes, both of those fights were the same type of situation. Before you hit the canvas, they were out.
And wasn't it so, Harold, that it was the last minute or the last second of the 10th round, literally, that he got knocked out?
He was running. Valdez down. He was coming after him. He had just landed some good punches. He was aggressive. He was looking to follow up on those good punches.
Yeah.
And he was coming in with a full head of steam. Yeah. And,
Berchelt had been down twice in the fight already.
Yes.
Prior to that. He had already been down twice. He had already gotten counts and stuff. But, that was an absolutely amazing fight. Whenever you put two Mexican warriors in the ring like that, you're always going to get fireworks, man. It's incredible what they produce, the kinds of battles that they produce, you know?
True.
Yeah, Mexican fighters are just, you know, they're cut from a different cloth. They're just a different way of fighting, and it just produces fireworks every single time. It's a beautiful thing to watch. And, let's push it on right here. Let's go to the fighter of the year.
as they say overseas, fighter. Right. Fighter.
Fight.
We say fighter. There's no T's, there's no double T's, there's fighter.
Yeah.
But
yes, and we're talking about the fighter of the year. So who you got, Harold? Yeah, you digging the music, right? Tell me who you got. Who you got as the fighter of the year? Do I need a drum roll? What do I need?
Well, we've got to go with Canelo Alvarez.
Oh. Bam.
And we don't have any other choice. Him or hate him, he simply went and cleaned everybody out. And when he cleaned everybody out, whether you thought they were on par with him or not, he brutally beat them up. So he just did that. And he unified and he made history. And each fight was a brutal beatdown. Right. I can't really put anyone close to that. And number one box office draw, number one man in boxing. His story crosses all lines of communication. He is on, the talk shows. He is doing football telecasts or talking about him during any type of telecasts. He comes across. So he's transcended just boxing. He's in every media circle. And that is a success.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's, it's just amazing what he's been able to do. He's a pound for pound king, man. Canelo Alvarez is just really unstoppable in a sport. He's lots of fighters look up to him. He's just really, I just don't see any end for King Canelo. Saul Canelo Alvarez, what do you think?
Well, another conversation. He's looking to, move up to different weight classes to, conquer there also. But that's another situation. So, but as of now for this application, he is our fighter of the year.
Yeah, we don't really need to get into all the nitty gritty about why he's the fighter of the year, because everybody who's listening in are, you guys all know. You love boxing, and if you don't know who Canelo Alvarez is, then you don't really know much about boxing. But he's definitely just an outstanding, outstanding fighter. He's reigning, and he's looking to defend where he can, and he's looking to go up where he can. And yeah, if he goes up to the next, he's on a mission. He's got a whole agenda for what he wants to do in this sport before he retires. So. Good for Canelo Alvarez, again, Fighter of the Year I've got him 2 years in a row as Fighter of the Year. But,
Hey, just a side note, that picture you have up there, hey, fans, I just want to tell you, the sanctioning body fees that he has to pay for each of those belts is astronomical.
What is it? What is it? Tell them. Tell the fans. Tell the listeners.
I can't quote numbers. These are just numbers that I've known in the past. Don't quote me.
Well, they're going to quote you.
For each belt, at least starting, are you looking at $5,000? And I may be so below the number.
Did you say $5,000?
I could be just below. Now I could be just so wrong. It could be $50,000 for all I know. But if even at my novice understanding of it, that's still four belts at $5,000, which is what, $20,000 or whatever, which, is not a lot to him. But just the fact that he has to pay every time he defends those belts.
Yeah.
So a lot of fighters can't continue to keep all the bills because they can't pay the sanction fees.
No, absolutely.
That's just a little side note.
No, I think it's a great point that you're touching on. I think it's important if you're listening in and you know exactly what the sanctioning fees are. Canelo, if you're willing to jump on the podcast and let us know, we'd love to know what you're paying for your sanctioning fees for sure. we can get you on to find that out. I'd be very interested to know. I am going to err on the side of always doing my research when I...
I'm just speculating.
Yeah, no, your speculation is perfectly acceptable. I don't have a problem with speculation. In fact, the entire sport of boxing is mostly speculation. So, for me, it's absolutely fine. I think I want to know.
I feel I've lowballed it so much.
Oh, yeah.
To ridiculousness, if that's a word. But I've really lowballed. It's quite a bit more now that I think about it. But I'm not going to quote that. And that's a safe, ignorant assessment. I won't be dragged over the coals for that because it's so far below what the actual fees may be of a fighter of his caliber and the prestige of those organizations. So I'm an imbecile in that type of no, you're estimation.
I'm going to find out.
But it's nice to see a picture with all the belts. You know, he has the Ring Magazine belt, WBC on the green. He has the IBF around his waist. He's got the red, the WBA, and then the one you can't see is the WBO that is in his far hand. That's yeah, you can see the back of it. So those are the big boys. That's what you want to right. to achieve.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm going, listen, I pulled up something about sanctioning fees. I got a sanctioning fee from Miguel Cotto when he was fighting. His sanctioning fee for the WBC was $300,000. So it's not cheap. you're talking about $125,000, $150,000. It could be even more. I know Floyd paid way much more, way more than $125,000 for a sanctioning fee. So we should check that out. We should get on with Ness or some of these guys that do a lot of homework on the sanctioning fees and all what people are paying and this and that. And we should get them on and chop that up for sure. So let's get into the fight of the year. Harold, who do you have as the, what bout do you select as the fight of the year?
Well, I can get my credibility back with this response. I must say the Deontay Wilder Tyson Fury fight, because there was knockdowns in the third round. There was knockdowns of the other person in the fourth round. Both fighters were teetering on being knocked out every round, fifth round, sixth round, seventh round.
Right.
It was just back and forth. There was no clear advantage. Everyone was in a situation of being knocked out at any time.
Right.
And then Tyson started taking control. But up until that point, up until about maybe the seventh, about the eighth round, when Tyson kind of still it looked like he was kind of dominating to a point, not dominating, but had the upper hand, he was still vulnerable to get hit. So that fight had me really enjoying every part of it, because it started early with the third round knockout. We got to see Wilder with his new discipline display that in the first two, three rounds. We noticed that Tyson Fury stopped moving his head like he did in the prior fight. So Deontay was able to drop that right hand more often. So all the elements just fit into a great fight. And, you know, these are the big boys.
Right. Right. No, it was an amazing fight. It was, it could possibly be one of the best fights of the century. I mean, really just an outstanding teeter totter back and forth, ebb and flow between the two fighters. And, I think, if my memory serves me correct, which it doesn't ever, I think that, that WBC fight was Fury knocked Wilder down, out, not out, but down three times in that fight, right? And then Fury hit the canvas two times in that fight.
Yes.
And it was just, and everybody tuned in. It was one of those classic heavyweight fights that you reminisce of from the past, you know, from many years go back. It was really, really an outstanding fight. And,
Foreman and Lyle, Knockdown.
Oh.
That was a fight that came to mind. Ron Lau and George Foreman.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So your old heads go back and pull that up, and it was very reminiscent of this fight here.
Yeah, no, that was an amazing fight. I remember the fight of the year in 2020. Do you recall the fight of the year for 2020, Harold?
I can't say I do. There's so many good ones. I can't say.
Well, my fight of the year for 2020, folks, was the Jose Zapata versus Ivan Baranchik. Remember that? It was a top-ranked card. It was also in the bubble. It was right at the tail end of 2020. And it was just an outstanding bout. If you've ever, if you want to see a really powerful, dramatic, you know, creme de la creme boxing match, go in and check that out. It was a top-ranked card. Jose Zapata versus Ivan Baranchik in 2020. That was my fight of the year for 2020. But this year, I concur with you. The fight of the year is definitely Wilder versus Fury 3. Harold, so good.
Now my second runner-up is Chocolatito and Ramirez.
Okay.
Now, that was a great fight also. That was tit for tat the entire way. That was my 1A, my 1B, if you will. They have a third one coming up in March, but the second one was excellent. And that had your breath from round one to round 12.
Right.
So that was an excellent fight also. So if you're going to pull up some fights just to watch them and just to be mesmerized, you've got that fight, the Tyson fight. But then if you want to pull the Chocolatito fight, you can pull that one. For your old heads, I would pull the Ron Lau, George Foreman fight.
Wow.
That was a great fight.
Mm. What about the Joshua Usyk fight? Remember that fight?
Yes. That necessarily wasn't a fight where fans who enjoy, you know, the back and forth and the advantages taken and given away, that's not really going to speak to that.
Right.
That fight was more technical, and you were more surprised to see the bigger man, you know, getting touched as much as that. He was getting touched. He really wasn't getting beat up. Well, he was being landed on, but he wasn't in no way going to be knocked out, but he just got hit a lot.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't have an answer. So some people may say that, well, that was kind of boring because obviously he didn't fight well. And, you know, we know who was winning the fight, and the big dude should have been winning, but he wasn't. And that was the entire premise of the fight. So as far as a fight of the year or whatever, I can't necessarily, I can't qualify that for that.
No, I get it. I had it listed as one of the upsets of the year, actually, to be honest.
Upset
of the year, for sure.
Well, AJ's lost before because he, you know, certain skill sets that he may not use in a particular fight. So to me, it wasn't an upset,
yeah.
You know, and he always has the clause that we can come right back and get his belt back. So I go into it knowing that if he loses, he's going to get an immediate rematch, and
right.
he'll make the provisions, even if he has to stink up the fight to win belts back,
right.
Which may happen this time with Usyk. He may just stink it up. He may just bully the guy, throw some punches, grab him, hold him, and just be sure that he lands, you know, punches, enough punches per round to win it on a scorecard. I don't think it'd be exciting or anything like that.
Well,
because he's not going to allow Usyk to do that movement and throw the jabs and get him. That's not going to happen. He's going to throw punches, bully him, let the referee break it up. Throw the punches, bully him, let the referee break him up and make sure he has enough points per round to get his belts back. That's what's going to happen.
Wow. Yeah, so you just broke it down, Harold. You just broke that down just now for the fans. You just, you know, laid it out for them. And, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think that, unfortunately, Usyk was way too fast for Joshua in that fight. And they had a very, very good, game plan for that fight. So that was an example for me of how an exceptional game plan really can affect a fight of that caliber. You know, it was just really, for me, it was an upset because I didn't expect that. I didn't expect a smaller guy to be able to come into the heavyweight division and do what he did. But, you know, again, a lot of people were sleeping on that fight. A lot of people didn't even watch that fight, you know, because they didn't think it was going to be much of anything, but it ended up being an amazing upset. And now I do want to talk about another upset, which I felt was an upset, which was the George Kambosos versus Teofimo Lopez fight. Thoughts?
That was upset only because, as I spoke earlier in our broadcast, Lopez abandoned all his discipline because he was embarrassed that he was unable to knock out Kambosos early.
Right.
Therefore, he just dropped all the discipline and just went full bore. But Kambosos is a world-class fighter.
Yeah.
And he knows how to fight. And when you're presenting a target that is undisciplined and desperate, as Lopez was, he is going to be vulnerable. And he showed it, and he lost.
Well, right. And the young 24-year-old Lopez, you know, he did put the championship belts on the line, and he was dethroned. I mean, he really was. He was knocked down in the first round, and he scored a knockdown in the 10th round. Kambosos was given a split decision. It was a controversial split decision victory. But yeah, they were both cut up in the fight. They were both kind of messed up. And Lopez had a purported like a hole in his esophagus. So, you know, I don't really, I haven't seen the actual medical report, but I know that when that came out, there was a lot of discussion about, you know, the wind getting pulled out of the sails of Kambosos because Teofimo was legitimately ill in that fight. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I looked at a lot of the information concerning that, and you know, the air in the cavity that was you know, trapped inside of his body, and the pressure was putting on his heart and his lungs and that type of thing, you know, after the fact. I'm not a medical person or anything like that. Just watching the fight itself, I didn't see Lopez in a situation where he was compromised, where he was breathing heavily at the end of the rounds,
right,
where he looked labored, anything like that. He was of singular mind, and he was in singular mind to get this guy out of there. So he wasn't necessarily hurt or beat down or nothing like that. He was just coming. I'm going to come. And that's what he did. So if that was bothering him, which it may have been,
right,
it was evident. Now, if it was evident in the fight where he was just like laboring and this and that, and he just looked like didn't look like himself at all, then I can understand, but then I could see it. But in the fight, it was not clearly shown. I saw a strong Lopez coming because he had to handle that business because of, you know, the situation that he was in.
Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely know that there was a lot of speculation about it. I don't think it's the last that we're going to see of Teofimo Lopez or George Kambosos in any way, shape, or form. I think, if anything, it just heated up a little bit more. And it's going to be really exciting to see what happens in 2022, man. There is so much going on in the 135-pound weight division and now the 140-pound weight class as well. And it should just be absolutely outstanding to see what happens in 2022. I did want to make an honorable mention of the Trainer of the Year.
Trainer.
And I wonder if you have any thoughts about a Trainer of the Year. If any of you out there listening in and you want to make a comment, drop it in on your YouTube comment on our podcast notes and let us know. What about you, Harry?
Trainer, once again, we got to go with Eddie Reynoso, who had the conqueror of Bill Chelt, his charge, and he had Canelo. He helped Andy Ruiz do well, and he helped Frank Sanchez do quite well. He knocked out Agaba, the Nigerian gentleman, and he showed great skills. They all have certain disciplines that all the fighters show, the same kind of discipline that Canelo shows, you know, with the movement and this and that and the other. So he clearly taught them a particular discipline that they display in the fights. So as far as that's concerned, yes, he has to be the trainer, not just because of Canelo, but what he's imparted on his other fighters who have been successful because of his tutelage. So, yes. But I do have a 1B.
Okay.
Which is the gentleman out of the Krung Gym. His name escapes me.
You're talking about, you got me good.
Tyson's trainer.
Yeah.
Sugar Hill was able to take Tyson and change him for the second fight. And he changed him for the next fight. Now, the smallest thing that has really jumped on me, because I have him as 1B, is because he took the Ali kid, the Ali grandson, who is a total knob. He has nothing.
Right.
He has nothing but the name and the appearance or whatever.
Right.
He has nothing. And within the months that he's had him, I've seen such huge improvement from fight to fight. It's just huge. It's just, he's like jumping over years of amateur work, amateur pedigree, amateur, discipline. And he's teaching this guy this stuff in between these fights here.
Right.
And he's actually showing this training between each fight. It's not subtle. People who know boxing, everyone on here knows boxing. If you look at the first Ali Raj fight, if I say his name correctly, and the second one and the third one, you see such huge jumps in quality of understanding the sport. It's just phenomenal. So for me, seeing him take that gentleman and put him in the position where he is, and he really doesn't have anything, but now he has something to the point where it's so recognizable that he's being trained. Someone is training him. I have to give him 1B.
Yeah. No, I get it. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, Sugar Hill is outstanding. Eddie Reynoso, outstanding. I think what makes it really interesting from the Canelo Alvarez, Eddie Reynoso, is that both of these gentlemen, this is the first time ever in the history of the sport where both trainer and fighter get the Trainer Fighter of the Year award by Ring Magazine. I believe it's Ring Magazine, 2 years in a row. So that's never happened before. So congratulations, Canelo Alvarez and Eddie Reynoso for that, and certainly for Sugar Hill for making the boxing breakdown list of Trainer of the Year.
Yes, yes. A lot of trainers will take popular fighters and have them in their gym, but they don't necessarily work with them. They have their underlings, their number two guy, number three guy. Freddie Roach used to have great people in the gym, but he would have his underling trainers work with these guys. Mark, you know the discipline of you being a trainer. But Sugar Hill actually takes the time, and he's on the menu to be worked with every day, and you can see it.
Oh, yeah, you can see it in his work. 110%, you can see it in his work. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. You absolutely can see it, Harold.
But then on the other hand, you have to realize the significance of doing that. This is an Ollie kid. He's going to get the fights. He's going to get the exposure. He's going to get the niceties that boxing is going to offer because of his pedigree.
Yeah.
And if you happen to be there and you help him get to the point where he can be a huge box office draw, it only helps you. So, yes, I guess I would pay attention to him myself because of his upside. So,
right.
You know, it's noble what he's doing, but it is a feasible financial situation that causes him to be so hands-on.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with you 100%. So if we were going to take a quick look ahead, you were talking about earlier on, before we got on the air, about the January 7th Showtime event in Orlando, Florida, which I believe, Harold, is an all heavyweight extravaganza. Is that correct?
That's tomorrow night. That's New Year's New Year's Day, New Year's night.
Oh, snap. And by the way, I misspoke. Excuse me for y'all listening in. It is not on Showtime. It is actually on Fox Pay-Per-View, and it's out of Hollywood, California. Pardon me. Yes, it is January 1st, which is tomorrow.
Mañana.
This is the first day of 2022. And you got Luis Ortiz versus Charles Martin for a 12-round IBF heavyweight eliminator. Frank Sanchez versus Carlos Negron for a 10-round heavyweight bout. Johnny Rice versus Michael Coffey, Brooklyn's own Michael Coffey, 10 rounds in the heavyweight division. And then Gerald Washington versus Ali Demarezen for a 10-round heavyweight bout. And then Victor Vikalisk versus Igo Kilidraz for a 10-round heavyweight bout. I'm sure I murdered both of those last two names, but I apologize. And check out the fights tomorrow at a Hollywood, Florida Fox pay-per-view. It's on, it's on, it's on. And there are going to be fights on Showtime, ESPN, ESPN Plus, Fox pay-per-view, PBC, DAZN. Everybody has got fights in January. February is going to be action-packed, Harold.
Yes, another note on the fight tomorrow night is pay-per-view. However, they cut the price in half. So it's going to be, what, $30?
Oh, really?
Yes, it's going to be $30 or $40, but okay. They cut it in half.
All
so
right.
That is a nice little Christmas present. And if, in fact, enough people appreciate that and buy it at that number, they're going to be looking to do other fights of that type of caliber at that price point. If it makes financial sense.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to paying for that because out of the six fights, four of them are going to be quite interesting, you know, that I know of. The other two could be the best. The ones that I think are going to just going to be okay may be the best two of the night.
Right.
But I know four of them will be worth the watch because heavyweight boys, they get knocked down, they get up. They get knocked down, they get up, or they just don't get up. But they're going for success immediately. So,
I can't wait to watch that, Harold. I am so pumped about tomorrow. Hopefully you don't stay up too late. I doubt it. The listeners, my good friends listening to the Boxing Breakdown, I'm sure you're going to have an absolutely outstanding New Year's Eve and New Year's, and we are delighted that you could be with us today. And Harold, what can I say? Happy New Year to you.
Same to you.
All the blessings and all the joy that a new year brings to you and your family. To those of you out there listening in, I hope that we all can have a better 22 than we had 21. And let's get it on.
Let's get it on.
Yeah. So, Harold, thank you for being with me on the Boxing Breakdown. Thank you, listeners, for being with us on the Boxing Breakdown. And until next time, peace, love, and definitely Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Fight fans, join host Mark Roxie and special guests as they break down all aspects of the boxing world, including news, business, management, training, promotions, fan reactions, upcoming events, matchups, future boxing stars, title fights, state of the boxing world, and all the stuff you don't see when you watch boxing. This podcast is released each week on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Live streamed on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook Live. It's the Boxing Breakdown, hosted by Mark Roxie.